This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 864, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I would shine just like a million suns if you just love me, baby. I'll be in your life again, so baby, baby, just say maybe. Now here I come to dance around the sun. Been oh so blue, stuck behind the moon. Now let me in, back where we begin, and let me hold you like the way I used to do. Ooh.
My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host Josh Flanagan.
Hey there,
and welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 864. Joining us this week, as he does on occasion, is Dr. Ryan Haupt.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something about the Ron Richards Memorial Chair, and I was going to talk about how we missed him, but. Because there's no place for that today. Yeah.
We don't miss him today.
All right, well, he's being a pain. I'm here. Hey, everybody.
Every week we read our comics. Hey, we read our comics short and tall stacks. Doesn't matter what they are. We read them. We talk about them. We pick the best one. We call that the pick of the week.
If talk comics about were pancakes, we would eat any number of them.
I was really wanting to get pancakes. They're still in my mind. I had one last week, and now they're back.
I bought an entire quart of maple syrup yesterday. I'm not lying.
Connor sent me, I don't remember if it was, no, I think it was on Instagram. It was a picture of pancakes. And I was like, this is the best looking stack of pancakes, which it may not have objectively been, but at that moment when you're like,
that was very good. Pancakes. The Griddle Cafe, Los Angeles, California, Sunset Boulevard. Oh,
I remember that place. That was a good place.
Yes.
I bought a pint of kimchi, a carton of farm fresh eggs, and a quart of maple syrup, all from one gas station.
Gas station kimchi.
All right. Oh, yeah. I got $700.
I got a hookup. I got a gas station kimchi hookup. Anyone who wants to know, DM me on the DL.
So here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. We will do the best we can to not be egregious. And this week, Ryan had the pick. And before we get into it, it was so bizarre because it was technically, I guess, a fifth week, even though it was the first week of February. And February only has 4 weeks to begin with. This week, to me, Josh, tell me what you think. It felt like the beginning of the pandemic when they were just sort of putting random books out that they still had to put out.
It was a little weird. I ended up with, I don't know, like 11, which was helpful. But the thing is, I seem to remember this happened last year. January, early February. It was just like, it was just bleh.
And I feel like, here's the thing. Anyone who listens to the show on a regular basis knows we love the show and we love comics. However, sometimes the week is terrible or blah, and when we say that, we inevitably get the comments or the emails saying you guys should quit because you hate comics. This week wasn't a great week. I'm just going to kick it off.
I mean, I did almost quit this week.
Lower expectations.
If it's any consolation.
I was so glad you had the pick, Ryan.
This is when it kicks in. This is the game.
Yeah. This is what you got to do. If you're in the podcasting game, you got to go every week. You can't stop because the week wasn't inspiring.
Listen, there wasn't anything fun to talk about. Gene Hackman said to Keanu Reeves in The Replacements, winners always want the ball. All right. And this week I had the ball. And the ball was passed to, maybe lateraled to, Moon Knight 20, still being written by Jed MacKay, art by Alessandro Cappuccio, and colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. And
Francesca Cappucci.
Cappuccio. Francesca
Cappucci married, I can't think of his name, Cliff Booth's partner, who was the famous actor in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Francesca Cappucci was the lady. Was the actor
Rick
Dalton? Thank you.
So there's two interesting things about having introduced this book. One, it's Moon Knight 20, no legacy numbering in sight.
Yeah, it's weird.
And then there's a backup story in this one called Moon Debt, written by Danny Laura with art by Ray Anthony Height, with inks by LeBeau Underwood and Scott Hanna, with also colored by Rochelle Rosenberg. And I only bring that up because I want to talk about that as part of the reason this book was selected as the pick.
I just want to say, I'm always happy to see Scott Hanna's name. I'm happy to see
he's still
getting work. He's still out there.
Wasn't
still grinding.
Ron Garney's inker for a long time?
No, well, I don't know. Maybe he was Tom Lyle's inker on Robin in the early 90s. That's where I first, that's back when I first started recognizing creator names. He was, it was Chuck Dixon, Tom Lyle, and Scott Hanna on Robin. And, you know, that was going on 40 years, 30 years. I can't do age math anymore, but that was a long time ago. So I'm glad to see he's still getting it done.
As am I. And I actually recognize Scott Hanna's name as well. I was happy to see him. I've been reading Jed MacKay's run on Moon Knight this entire time and have enjoyed sort of the weird, I mean, this almost feels like a Marvel Knights book in a lot of way, and not like in the haha, he's, you know, the Midnight Mission and protects travelers and knights, but I'm talking like the early 2000s Daredevil, Joe Quesada, you know, Marvel Knights line, right, that reinvigorated Marvel back in the day. This has I feel like a similar vibe, and I've been enjoying the series all along, and I've enjoyed the way that Jed MacKay has reintroduced the alternate personalities. It's not overwrought. Mark Spector isn't agonizing over the fact that he's got dissociative identity disorder. He's very much using the alt personalities as tools in his sort of arsenal to fulfill his mission. And there's I thought a hilarious scene where Reese, the vampire assistant that he has working for him, is figuring out that there's the plot of this issue is that all of Mark's old allies from like way back in the day, very obscure Moon Knight and ancillary Marvel characters, are being murdered. And Mark's trying to figure out what's going on, where the pattern is. And Reese recognizes that there's something has to do with the way that New York City's streets are laid out. And so she doesn't need Mark. She needs Jake the cabbie. And so she's like, I got to talk to Jake. And he's like, what, really? And she's like, yeah, let me talk to Jake. And so he pulls off his cowl and he puts on a mustache, and suddenly he's Jake and he has cabbie powers. And I was like, all right, that's fun. That's a good
mustache. Was funny. It was a funny bit. I like this book a lot. I really do enjoy it. I'm always happy to see it come out. I really like this little team he's got. I really love the addition of Tigra to the mix. Tigra and Moon Knight were West Coast Avengers teammates. She's a fun character who you don't see very often anymore. And one of my favorite things, honestly, about the book is the Alessandro Cappuccio art, which is so unique to superhero books that I read. It's not sketchy, but it's scratchy, if that makes any sense. Some of it's the coloring. It's the way that they make the costume look. They don't just draw him with a white bodysuit. It's sort of like the whole costume is constantly in weird shadow. And I like it. I like the book. I like the way it looks. This was a fine issue. I did the vampire storyline went a little long for me, but for the most part, I've been enjoying the book all along. It's been
a really good book. And there's these, you know, the two assassins that are killing all the people that he's been allied with over the years. At one point, he catches up with them, and he's sitting on the phone line, and it's very Dark Knight Returns, but instead of the dark Batman costume that's black backlit with the lightning bolt Moon Knight's entire costume was like glowing in the rain.
Yeah, really cool looking.
I thought that was a really cool visual, and it just like it's not something. It's again, it's what you said. It's the combination of Jeb McKay clearly scripted this scene, and it was drawn in a really inventive way, and then the coloring I think takes it to the next level. And so
yeah,
I thought
Michelle
it was,
Rosenberg's really doing a great job on it. I mean, Jeb McKay is the reason why I think he's sort of, I don't want to say exploding, but he's coming up. Was he the one who's announced him as the new Avengers writer?
I think that is what you said.
Yeah, so
he's on the rise. They did the thing where he did a couple of good books, then he expanded. He got to be on a bunch of books, but they're not top tier books. And now it sounds like he's getting a shot at the Avengers. And it's interesting because in the past they used to do that a lot faster. Yeah. Now they put on the brakes a little more. Like you did one great book, they'd be like, "You're on Avengers."
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it seems like the big studios learned that same lesson the hard way with putting indie directors on giant films. So, you know, maybe the comic companies are also seeing that same.
Mm-hmm. Well, both of them have always done that. I think what his strength is, he writes great action. He writes, you know, intense, you know, dramatic stuff, but he's also very funny. You mentioned the mustache bit, which made me laugh, but there was also Eight Balls Having a Wonderful Saturday bit where, Moon Knight calls the, you know, Eight Ball, who's got a giant eight ball head.
Go for Eight Ball.
For information, he's in the bubble bath. He's got candles. He's got, you know, music. He's got some wine. Like, this is a Saturday night. And he's enjoying it. It's just, he sprinkles in bits like that that don't take away from the drama of the story. And I've really been enjoying all of his work that I've been reading. And I'm happy to see he's moving up. And we'll see if he can be the magical writer that can make the Avengers relevant again. Because it's been a while.
What did you think of the backup story, Connor?
I skipped it.
So the backup story is set in the 1970s, summer of 77, and it's a Blade Moon Knight team up, but it's a previous version of Moon Knight pre-Mark Spector. It's not someone I was familiar with. It's a young African-American woman who was raised in a two-faith household where her mom was Christian and her dad worshipped Khonshu, and so she ended up as the Fist of... You're common. Right. happens to the best of us. Yeah. But, you know, she doesn't like a vampire operating in her city. But then she realizes that Blade is the Daywalker and they decide to team up and go take out a coven of yuppie vampires who are trying to buy up real estate around the city so that they can then use those real estate holdings to feed off of people. So they're killing people with records and it's very jive. And it's, I thought it was like fun throwbacky old school Blade, and then it cuts to a modern day scene where Mr. Knight in his suit is asking Blade for a favor to help train Reese, his assistant, who happens to have been turned into a vampire, to learn how to control her vampirism. And Blade's like, "Yeah, sure, I got this." And Moon Knight's like, "What are you talking about?" And Blade's like, "Well, I owe you a favor." And he's like, "I don't remember in any of my personalities ever doing a favor for you." And he goes, no, it wasn't you, it was the previous one of you, but don't worry, I got you. And then Blade walks off, and it was like, it was just cool. I don't know, I dug it as a little 70s throwback story.
I thought it was interesting that it was there at all, you know, like I'm always curious about the economics of the backup, you know, things like Action Comics make sense, but this was just a random, I was like, whoa, what's a backup story? That's strange, because it wasn't like it took away pages from the main story. It was
I would say in terms of deciding on a pick on a week where I was having trouble finding inspiration, this was part of the calculus that went into selecting a pick.
Buddy, you don't got to explain anything to us this week.
I'm just telling you.
Whatever you have, whatever you chose for whatever reason, go with God.
So it's $4.99.
So they added $1 to it. Interesting.
Right. And so maybe as an offset, like they can still cover their nut and make more of a profit, but add pages. I mean,
there's only eight extra pages.
Well, then that kind of carries. Maybe like
if you can't cover your nut with eight extra pages.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, it's a lot of money.
What kind of nut are we talking here? Brazil nut?
Ryan, explain to us why the Avengers 765 is in the number two position this week.
I did not add it to the script. Oh. I added it to the script, but I was not the one who suggested it be included.
Josh?
I suggested it be included.
But
I did not. I'm going to say the same thing about the Avengers I say all the time. And it is that when I look at this book, I kind of go, I don't know. But I usually find something in it to like. And this is kind of an origin story of this one type of Loki. And he is the Loki.
You guys haven't been reading. So this book has been bouncing back and forth between the main Avengers book and Avengers Forever, which you've not been reading.
No.
Because you have philosophical objections to the series, which I understand. But they revealed in the most recent issue of that Avenger Prime, this mysterious figure they've been alluding to for however long, is Loki.
Yeah. And I kind of put that together because I wasn't so... I've been sort of half following the story for a long time. So I just sort of take bits of it. So what we've got here is a story. I mean, obviously, this is all being fed a little by the Loki show.
Yes.
Just the idea that there's all these different Lokis. And this is the Loki who wins. He's the one starts off, he goes, you know what, the happiest moment of my life was when I killed my brother. And then you learn that he's talking about Thor. And this is the Loki, like he just had to win. And so he kills everything. And he's still like, I still don't feel great about it. And then he realizes that, because he realized that all Lokis that he ever meet lose. And it changes. And so he tries to kill all the Avengers. And then he's like, oh, I have to save the Avengers, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was a nice short story. And it was also, I thought it was interesting that in a world where I've had enough of Loki, I actually really enjoy this one. And I liked the self-reflection of it, I suppose.
Because he doesn't have anyone to talk to.
I don't know that bothers him. It's
no,
just
no,
that
no,
he
I'm
didn't...
saying, like, yeah, he's not. He doesn't have anyone to be smarmy at because he's alone. Like, he only wins because he's alone. You know what I mean?
So, like, actual Loki should never have any self-reflection. Like, but because this is a different one, you get to, you know, you get to do a different thing. I also, I think the Javier Garon art was fantastic. It was just the right side of cartoony.
He's very good.
The horns on this Loki's head are ridiculous. They make no sense. They look like a ridiculous handlebar mustache that's sprouting over from his forehead. And it works for me in the art style. I think, you know, the coloring actually looks really nice with all this stuff. There's a shot, page 10, and it's sort of about, it's in the part where he's talking about his victories. Like, he's taking everybody down. And there's a shot of the hammer Mjolnir being chained down in a crater from the level of the crater, and there's chains going out all around, and he's sort of watching it. I just think that's a beautiful panel, you know, and he makes sure that Iron Man never becomes Iron Man. You see Tony Stark again, right from the ground. So you're looking up at him, you know, with bottles all around him, and he's, you know, demon in a bottle kind of thing. It's just lots of little cool moments, you know, and he finds a way to lose and blah, blah, blah. Again, I think we said this an issue or two ago of Avengers, you know, the larger story doesn't so much interest me, but I do love reading this every once in a while and be like, hey, there's Jason Aaron, you know? I also really, I really respect the fact that none of this has felt like a Jason Aaron story. He's just going for it and throwing a ton of stuff against it, you know, which is kind of preferable to just coming on and doing a straight up run of this. I know it's, again, it's not my favorite thing, but I think he's doing the right thing. If that makes sense.
Well, I mean, he's done so long. He's done all kinds of things. He's done traditional stories. He's done, like, it's
right.
The question is, I mean, we talked about it before. I don't want to get into it now, but, you know, why hasn't it mattered? And it's not his fault. And why doesn't Justice League matter? Why doesn't Avengers matter anymore? It's interesting.
I think that's almost outside of the scope of the. Yeah, I mean, like, I think that's outside of the scope of the writers, in a way.
Well, yes and no. The story that Bendis wrote made Avengers relevant. It hadn't been relevant in years.
There was at the time, though, there was no outside influence. It was just he got to write his story and do the thing, and there was no other version of it. And now there's stuff coming in from all angles. You know, like there's, well, you got to do this because of studios, and then this because of the game.
Right, exactly. There's all kinds of things. I wonder why that's. I don't know. There's no answer.
No, I know.
You know, it's like, why. Why don't people care? Why is Justice League? And they've both been irrelevant for about the same amount of time. It's been about 10 or so years since.
Which coincides with the rise of superhero movies.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Blood Tree, number one from Image Comics, and Peter J. Tomasi.
Yeah, I was surprised. I hadn't seen that name in a while.
Max art by Maxim. There's a lot of accents.
Let's see.
Simzy.
Please keep going. Keep trying.
I would assume someone named Maxim Simzy would be real cool about their name being mispronounced and being.
It looks like Simic. It looks like a Slavic name, like Luka Doncic.
Slavic for sure.
Jokic or something like that.
Simic.
Might be Zimich. I don't know what that little thing on the S means.
Right. I'm sure. Be chill, Maxim. I feel like I picture Maxim as 7 feet tall and big and angry. Anyway, this was interesting. I mean, this week, I had my original pull list at 7 books on it. I ended up having 12. This was one of the books I added on later. And I knew nothing about it going into it, just that Peter Tomasi was the writer on it. There was an angel on the cover, so I thought it was supernatural. Doesn't seem to be. Seems to just be a cop story.
Seems more like 7.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it for the most part. Maxim's art is not there yet. A lot of things are rough, but I liked the style, sort of like an early Philip Bond style. But
okay,
some of it. He had a real problem with Maria's hair, the female cop. Her She looked like she was wearing a wig most of the time. But for the most part, I thought it did the job, and it was it was a nice cartoony style, which I enjoyed. But contrast to the cover art by Gary Frank, it was rough.
So I was thinking about it, and here's my thought as I was reading this: I thought it was okay, pretty good.
Yeah.
But, and then I started thinking about Pete Tomasi. Pete Tomasi was, he wrote a lot of mainstream comics for a while. He was on, Batman or was he just on Robin?
He did a bunch of Batman books. I think Detective.
Into Batman for a while. Yeah. The family. He was an editor at DC for a very long time.
He's a Jeff Johns guy. This is a Jeff Johns Mad Ghost book.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting for him to come to Image and he doesn't get to work with the caliber of artist that he's been used to working with.
Yeah, this is like a Dynamite or...
Yeah, and I just thought, what must that be like? Because, you were a pro and now you're, in the AAA or whatever.
Yeah, it's not bad. I've seen way worse on a book from a major company, but it's just early, it seems like it's an early... artist and is still figuring its way his way through.
And I just wonder what that's like. And I thought
it's not Chris Somney, that's for sure.
I thought the book was pretty good, but also I think it was there. There's places where there's a shitload of dialogue. It was like this genre was kind of new to him, this cop genre.
Yeah, I mean, so a serial killer is grafting wings, fake angel wings onto people and tossing them off buildings. One of them is in the middle of the Thanksgiving Day, the St. Patrick's Day parade in New York City, and then the other one is somehow off the roof of Yankee Stadium. I don't know how he got in there, but
which does not coincide with where home plate is. You gotta heave.
It's true.
There's even an overhead shot that illustrates this perfectly. I was like, where the fuck did that come from?
How did he throw her over the seats, which go for 40, 50 feet?
Josh, she had wings.
So maybe she glided.
also, I think, Josh Flanagan, you gotta heave. Yeah. That's like you the gotta title heave. Of your autobiography. You got title of your autobiography right there.
I mean, that's basically my entire life since I was 30.
It's a very New York book. The main cop is an Italian guy from Long Island.
But the way they're doing the murder mystery has a little bit of like True Detective season one, where there's mysterious, occultish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine. Like this is my watchword for the entire week. It was fine. It was fine. Like, it didn't blow my socks off. It wasn't bad. It was fine.
I know this isn't the segment, but are you going to read the next issue?
Maybe. I mean, a lot of this depends. Like, if it's a week where they got 25 books, maybe not. But I mean, I'm not. If I see it and it's not a big week, I'll read it.
You know what? There's been a rash of books that it was pretty good. But if you missed it,
yeah,
would you ever think about it again?
Probably not.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I realized that I missed. Jason Aaron did that book for Boom.
Yes.
End of the World or whatever. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I missed the second issue at some point.
Well, it's like 3 issues now.
Then I started reading the third one, and I was like, well.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And that's no good. Well, and I don't know if that's the work or that's me.
Yes. Well, speaking of, we talked about Scarlet Witch number one. It was a patron pick, and we said at the time, we might continue on. It would depend on the week. Well, this was the week for it to come out, because nothing else was going on. Scarlet Witch number two, Steve Orlando, Sarah Pacelli. And what I do like the most about this book is that it is a It flies in the face of comic book convention, or at least current comic book convention. They seem to be one and done team up stories with Scarlet Witch, and that's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I liked this issue. Again, everything was just kind of fine this week, but you know, I don't know.
Ryan, what'd you think?
I like Scarlet Witch a lot. Ryan, what'd you think of it?
I kind of wanted the backup story on this to be its own issue. Like the main issue was fine, but I also felt like, so, you know, Viv, Vision's daughter comes to Scarlet Witch for help. She's having nightmares and turns out she's got some demon who thinks that because Viv is AI, she can feed off of her indefinitely. But like, if this demon lady is an established character, it's not one I was familiar with nor had any attachment to. So right. Scarlet Witch being able to dispatch her by like literally just kind of waving her hands, which seems to be an issue this book has, where it's like Scarlet Witch can just do whatever.
Right.
Well, that's a Marvel problem.
Well, I think what Ryan's talking about is something that I've mentioned a couple of times in the past, is that, you know, as comics condense down and pages condense down, it's really tough to pull off a satisfying single issue story, especially if you're not going to make concessions in your page layout. So if you go back into the, you know, when single issue stories were the norm, you had you had more pages, but B, you had more panels per page. But here it's still 2, 3, 4 panels a page. So you get to the end of the 20 pages and you're like, well, how satisfying can it really be if there's not very much going on? It's harder. It's harder to do.
I mean, the thing about this book is there's actually things I like about it. And then what I also thought is, I was like, this doesn't seem much like Scarlet Witch to me. Either the TV one or the comic book one. But at the same time, I don't really care. For a little while, that character was like too dark, too fucked up. Now they're like, she's Satana, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the other thought I enjoyed it. I like how in this book, Tom King's Vision story just happened.
Right.
I was like, wait a minute, that was years and years and years ago.
And I like that there was an editor's note of like, see Vision 1 through 12. I was like, that's a big 12 issue ask of someone to just go, you know, just casually flip through.
It's worth reading. I was excited for Sarah Pacelli on a book, but this doesn't look like, if you asked me looking at this art, if it was Sarah Pacelli, and I'm not saying it's bad, but I wouldn't be able to tell you that. Like, it doesn't look like I think of her art.
She is very distinct the way she draws noses, so I always see those right away.
Okay.
I actually agree with you, Connor. That's true.
Well, also, apparently she has a very distinctive way of drawing huge breasts, because everybody in this book has cannons.
Okay.
I was looking at the noses the whole time, so I don't know what
you're talking about, Josh. No, I like, it's
nine
the fact that that stood out to me in a superhero comic. I was like, who the fuck drew this? It's just... Okay.
She's Italian, Josh. Have you been there?
That's true. Everything's a little more sexy.
So are you going to stay with it? Next issue is Polaris.
Probably. It's kind of, I mean, it's the closest I've been to enjoying a Steve Orlando book for a while, and I like to give him a chance. You know, I think they're skirting an edge of something I'm interested or not, but on a week like this, I enjoyed it.
Ryan, that you were right. Sense. I think the second story, the Storm team up, which, again, another backup story out of nowhere. It was more interesting.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun watching those two characters bounce off each other a little bit.
It kind of was, but I was also like, is this what Storm is like now? And I don't know. I haven't read a Storm in a book forever. But it, like, the only thing I don't like about it is like, you know what? Let's have some tea. I'm like, is this supposed to be like the preternatural female experience? They can relax and have tea.
Ladies like tea, Josh.
I feel like that's reductive. It was in both stories. It's like, let's just have some tea. I was like, what the fuck is with the tea? That's all you want, is to sit around and chat and have tea?
It's like the stereotype of the modern comic where people just sit around talking. It's like, now we're just going to sit around talking with tea instead of punching things.
I felt that, I mean, I know what you're saying. I have more points.
Okay.
I have complaints. I think the backup story was just very surfacey. It was just an excuse to watch these two hang out together. Which
it was only like 5 pages. There's not much you can do beyond surface.
Then the other thing. Is that this Darcy character is fucking pointless. So get her out of the book if you're not going to give her
you're just saying that because it's really annoying. The character's written is really annoying.
She's quippy, but not in a funny way. And like, if you're Kat Dennings, you can get away with it. But in this, I was like, this is bullshit.
Kat Dennings can get away with a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you have to assume, and they're leaving hints that there's more to her than meets the eye. So there's you don't reveal all your cards right away. So assume
no, but coming give me more.
She's gonna have some sort of infinite playlist that only Scarlet Witch can help her with.
So coming 2 weeks before Valentine's Day is DC's Valentine's special, DC Harley Quinn Romances number one, featuring a terrific cover by Francis Manapul of Aquaman and Harley Quinn in a bodice ripper embrace, as well as fake edging on like it's an old novel, like it's an old paperback. It was a fun cover. What DC's been doing with these, Marvel stopped doing these sort of holiday issues. They used to do them digitally, and I think they just stopped entirely. What DC's been doing lately is sort of putting on new creators, new writers, new artists, and that's fine. But you know what you get is usually work by new creators who aren't quite there yet. So, of all the creators on this book, I think I recognized, in terms of writers and artists, I recognized, I think, two names or three names. One was John McCrae, one was Ig Guerra, and one was Priscilla Petratis, who's an artist I worked with on the comic I made. But everybody else is sort of basically new to me. And
I recognize the name Amanda Diebert, but I don't know why.
I think you've literally made the joke on the show before that she is the Bert.
And of course, John McCrae, who was on Hitman and lead singer for Cake.
So
Fico Osseo, I recognize him.
There's eight stories here. Most of them are not worth talking about, to be honest.
Wow.
We're definitely going to get letters.
The Power Girl one that Amanda Diebert wrote was kind of fun, where Superman sets her up on a blind date with Jimmy Olsen, and they actually hit it off, and that was actually a fun story. Constantine was kind of whatever. Fire and Ice was kind of fun, where Fire wants a date, so they go on the superhero dating app that only superheroes can go on, and turns out there's a supervillain and they're hiding as a superhero, and so that was okay. The most interesting one was Aquaman and Harley Quinn. That was the final story, which was written by Yvonne Cohen and or by Fico Osseo. And that you had to overlook a lot of things, like it's all these DC superheroines, I guess, having a little gossipy brunch, and it features Harley Quinn. I'm like, no, come on. Mm-mm. No, that's a bridge too far.
That was basically the same as T.
But you, fine. Big Barda and Black Canary and Zatanna and Vixen and Lori Lamaris are having lunch. Fine. But Harley Quinn is a murderer and would not be there. But the joke in this one is they've all had some sort of romantic interlude with Aquaman. They tell their Aquaman story. It was fine. The whole issue was fine. It peaked with the cover. Honestly.
The Bert. Young Hellboy Assault on Castle Death number 4. This is the fourth in a 4-issue miniseries. There's been like a bunch of little Hellboy minis lately. Little Hellboy Renaissance. This one is it's actually really good. And the satisfying little 4-issue story, Young Hellboy. This is all drawn by Craig Russo, who has done Baby Hellboy stuff before. He's a really animated style, compared to like Mignola and you know all those other people that tend to do Hellboy stuff. And in this story, Young Hellboy is living on the base, and he's sick. He's got a fever, and in this fever, Lobster Johnson comes and he entreats Young Hellboy that they have to go on an adventure to save the world, and Hellboy is gung-ho for this. And at the same time, like a crazy occult dude who's been a deep sleeper cell, the order has been in it for hundreds of years, finally finds out about the Hellboy who's going to end the world and has to go kill him, and he doesn't. I don't mean to spoil it for you, but I really enjoyed this.
It was issue 404.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I know that Hellboy lives to be older.
Right.
Yeah.
He's young Hellboy. We know eventually he grows to be Hellboy.
And those of you who are savvy and nitpicky will say, but Josh, isn't that the complaint that you had about Rogue One? And I'd say, shut up, it's Hellboy.
And also, he had the same complaint about Andor, a prequel to the prequel Rogue One. So, you know, just go sit on it.
Yeah, but this is adorable. It doesn't have space horse.
This was the closest a Young Hellboy has come to like a Calvin and Hobbes. right? It's a boy. I mean, because it's Hellboy and his dog, so it's very much a boy and his tiger. He's delusional because of the fever, but it's treated in a very like, come on, boy, let's, you know, to his dog Mac, and like, it's very Hellboy is behaving haphazardly in a way that is kind of adorable and funny in the context of his hallucination, but is like real world consequences in what's actually happening around him.
Yeah, that and Scatman Crothers from The Shining shows up, and it turns out that it's possible Lobster Johnson is real.
You're not wrong. I mean, you're right.
He's not Scatman Crothers. He doesn't look like him, but that's where it ends up.
That's the motif that the character is playing. Yes.
Yes.
Oh boy. All right.
Any show where I can say Scatman Crothers.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a win.
Silver Surfer Ghostlight number one of a 5-issue miniseries written by John Jennings and art by Valentin Landro. I love Valentin Landro's art. I'm glad that was the main draw for me. And the colors by Matt Miller. I love the flat coloring. This book has a whole unique look to it that I love. It's really flat coloring. I mean,
it looks like an early or mid-2000s Vertigo book almost.
Yes, 100%. This book actually goes back in Marvel time and reintroduces a character, Al Harper, who first appeared in Silver Surfer number 5 in 1969 and died sacrificing his life to save the Silver Surfer. It was one of the earliest black characters in Marvel Comics. Just like, you know, a character who appeared in the book. So now they're bringing him back as a new hero called Ghostlight. We don't know anything about him. He just shows up at the very end. But
did you know that going into this, or did you go and look that up after reading this?
I got a press release.
Oh my gosh.
And knew it going into it.
All right.
That's how I knew it was.
I didn't know any of that going into this book. Yeah. I read this completely blind.
So this is just a story about a family, black family moves from New York City to upstate New York, a town called Sweetwater, not Stillwater, but Sweetwater. And
fever dog.
The uncle, the brother of the wife mysteriously disappeared many years ago, and that would be Al Harper. And he returns because the kids, who are slightly more precocious than they are drawn to be in terms of how they can talk, but whatever, it's all adult.
That was one of the main issues I have with this book.
It's a real precocious kids era in comics right now.
Yeah, they accidentally activate Al's machines, which sets up a bunch of cosmic rays that A, alert the Silver Surfer, and he comes rushing back, and B, wake up Al or bring him back from wherever he was. And so he's this glowing sort of green person. I thought it was fine.
These kids really Stranger Things the situation. Yeah.
The boy especially. The girl, she's a little older. She was all right. But the boy especially, he talked about it 5 years older than he looked. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're all geniuses.
They all do that.
In comics, all the kids are geniuses. I got to say, I liked this more as I went through it than I did at the beginning. This art made me think of Jim Krueger, which made me very happy.
Oh, yeah.
I really liked how at the end, shit just went nuts. They were like, what's in this room? Supervillain shit, cosmic stuff. I was like, all right, that escalated quickly. I did think, I was like, this girl is about to become the new Silver Surfer.
Yes, I was a little concerned about that.
Yeah.
My favorite page was page 26, which just shows the POV of the Silver Surfer.
That was
flying
great.
Towards Earth, but everything is sort of bent and blurry because he's going so fast. I thought that was a cool effect.
That is great.
It was really good. And I also liked where it went Kirby Cosmic, and it shows the Surfer out in space recognizing the signal to turn the board around and head back towards Earth. So I thought all the stuff out in space with the Surfer was great.
When I die, there will be a signal sent into space. And then what comes after from that signal will be your problem. Not mine. I'll be dead.
That was so threatening.
Well, yeah, you'll find out.
What did we
do? Black Tape number one.
I got nothing to say to that. That's legitimately menacing. I don't.
Yeah. I didn't read Black Tape, so I was waiting for one of you to jump in here. Black Tape number one.
Wait, I'm supposed to jump in after a threat like that?
Threats.
Yes.
When I die, you'll die too, Josh. And
I didn't say you
book.
Die. I just said you have to deal with it. Maybe it's happy.
So, do you remember Dan Panosian, who is an artist I love? He's one of those artists.
Dan Panosian is great.
He did an Image miniseries about a boxer.
He did that Darwin Cook inspired story a couple years ago. Yeah, because he and Darwin were buddies. He was at Darwin's wedding. I know friends. Like, we have friends in common here in LA. I've never hung out with him other than at the wedding, but I have friends of his.
So that was enough for me to pick up this thing, even though like the pitch, I like a book about a rock star. Almost never, no one gets that right, but I keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to make of this. Mm. I'm not going to tell you I didn't like it, but I barely hung on. It was a weird book. It was just like this woman being
early 70s. Right. A woman marries a major rock star man, and he dies right after they get married. And
Rockstar Man, that's a great name.
He's not a rocket man. He's a rockstar man.
He's a Japanese pop star. Rockstar man.
That's the translation. What do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a rockstar man.
Yeah. I would support that child with whatever they want to do. But like, so she's essentially being buffeted by all the people in his life who also had stakes in his career before she entered the fray. But she knows that his last great song is supposed to be released independently and not through the label. And then at the end of the book, she finds his sex cult dungeon thing.
Yeah, it was weird because it indicates that it's going to be supernatural. And I kind of waited for it, but it actually didn't quite get there. Right. Which I was fine with, but
it stuck with more like horror, but not supernatural.
I don't know. I mean, it was all like a feeling of a
publisher.
AWA, artist, writer, something. Yeah, I don't think I'll keep reading it. I there's something there, but it wasn't refined enough.
Briar number three. When I started reading this issue, I couldn't remember what had happened prior. I skipped an issue.
You couldn't remember the Briar Briars?
I couldn't remember prior Briar issues.
The Briar Briars?
I read the first one. I didn't remember two. And I was like, I think this is only a 4-issue miniseries. I don't know.
Really?
But I don't know. I was ready to bail about 2 pages into this. I was like, I don't remember. And I love Christopher Cantwell. And I like your Germán García art's really terrific, but
yeah.
It's just not sticking with me. The book's not sticking with me. I don't know how many issues this is.
I really like it, but I don't disagree with what you just said.
It's a 4-issue mini, so there's one left, so fuck it, I'll just read it.
Right, no, but I mean, I think there's more there. I'm kind of surprised that's all there is, but there's a bit where, you know, basically, Cantwell's thing is high-status men, you know, who are despicable and then become less so. And in this, you have a high-status woman. Mm-hmm. Who is no longer high status because she's been. I really, really liked. She gets to the gate of the place where she's going. Her little coalition are just fucking bickering all over the place. And the people at the top are the French knights from the Holy Grail. Yeah. And they dump shit on them.
I don't know what's like going on in that castle, but they have some liquidy shit and they need a doctor.
I mean, how healthy do you think the stool of medieval knights was?
I mean,
any day that they didn't get dysentery or cholera was a good day.
It was bad. I was like, oh, they're just pouring liquid on her. They all have horrible.
And you don't ever think about that, but everybody must have the shits all the time. Or I guess their biome was really tough.
I was going to say, yeah, must they? I don't know that they.
I don't know. Josh,
what was the number one killer in the Civil War?
Dysentery.
Was it dysentery?
Yeah.
That sounds like it.
The
yeah.
Tennessee trots.
You know, then she goes to meet gnomes, and gnomes are assholes. Like, it was funny. It was entertaining. Somewhat expected. You know, at this point, it's like any little thing is going to be turned on its head. So, if I did get the gnomes were little assholes, wasn't a surprise. But it was funny.
It was fun. I really like the low angle that they, because it wasn't clear that they were little at first, because they shot them from real low and foreshortened and everything. And
if it
fun.
Wasn't 4 issues, I'd probably say that was it for me. But
I could do 6 to 8. I feel like
you would do 8.
Yeah, I mean, if it was, he could take his time a little more. He's a great. The thing is, this is Cantwell's really good at characterization, and I don't think that he gave himself. There's enough room for him to do his brand of characterization here.
Yeah,
and I think that's what you're missing.
This is just not working for me.
There's so much story.
There's just a lot. Like, if I read this as a trade, I probably would enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Hey, so those are the books. We really had to, I'll be honest with you, stretch to get enough on here at the beginning. I wasn't quite sure we'd have more than 3 books to talk about, but we ended up doing it. But as always, the patrons get their say. The patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy get to vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, the overwhelming favorite was Where Monsters Lie, number one, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Kyle Starks. Art by Peter Kowalski, colors by Vladimir Popov, and letters by Joshua Reed. This is Carl Starks' latest horror-ish miniseries.
So I was excited when I saw his name on a new book, mm-hmm. and I was even more excited. Fans. Yeah, oh yeah, I was even more excited at the very beginning when I saw the roll call, and one of the characters is called the Fuckmaster, and he looks pretty buzzed out, and he has a gross teddy bear in his head.
The pitch for this book is it's a gated community in which serial killers live.
Super villains. Like Batman level super villains. I mean, there's Harlequin, there's like a puppeteer.
Yeah, you're right. They're like super villain serial killer types.
But they live there.
They're protected. They don't shit where they eat. But it opens up with one of them blew it and kids.
Yeah, you say that, but like the inciting incident is the opposite of.
Right, I'm telling you the rules of the place, which they violated because it opens up with a bunch of kids escaping one of the houses, and that causes trouble because they're not, you're not supposed to kill anybody in the gated community. Anyway, this Kyle Starks has a formula, which is a bunch of characters with silly names. And then chaos and
super wacky.
I thought this was the weakest one of all those books. I really liked Assassination. I really liked The Six Psychics of Trigger Keaton. Was just okay.
The last one, the haunted one.
Yeah, but that's not part of the formula. The formula of like a big group of people with silly names. I thought diminishing returns a bit with this formula.
It's probably the weakest, but I had a lot of fun reading it because he is good at putting those groups together. And you're right, it's wearing a little bit. But there's a bit where somebody has to sit next to the Fuckmaster, and they're like, oh, why do I have to sit next to him? He's creeping me out. They're like, he's the Fuckmaster. That's his thing. I was like, you could put that in a movie trailer and everyone would go.
Why does the cop have a orange mohawk?
I bumped on that too.
You can look at that. I saw it and I thought, I'm going to take this as a strength. And not a weakness. I mean, like, I interviewed Kyle Starks once. I talked to him. I can imagine. You can go back
and listen. I was interviewed by the police once. And
no, I've never been interviewed by the police. And I just thought I could see, like, hey, give that guy an orange mohawk. Why? You know, or maybe there's some reason. Maybe he used to be a serial killer. I don't know. I think the art style hurts it a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't work. I mean, Peter Kowalski is terrific, but it doesn't really work with the... All of the previous books have had a cartoonish, exaggerated style. This is a very sort of street level, almost.
The faces at the housing association meeting are kind of silly. I don't know. I think the comedy beats are played pretty well, but I don't know. It doesn't quite gel, but I did enjoy it.
I don't think it worked. Ryan, what did you think?
I think I'm more in line with Connor than I am with Josh on this one. I was excited by the idea of another Kyle Starks wacky lineup. I actually had the opposite reaction to Fuckmaster. I was like, Fuckmaster is not an improvement on Fuck Tarkington. And so I feel like I thought Fuckmaster was diminishing returns on the concept from jump. And it also felt like, you know, they threw us in a moment when the system was already falling apart. And like, we don't see the system working enough.
I don't think that's a bad thing if you're talking
about. You start late. Come in late.
I know. I'm just. I'm saying
I wanted to be pleased this week, and I don't know if you guys did.
Wow.
Josh was really looking. He was really looking.
I want to make the best of it. I want to find something that sparks joy as it was. I'm so sorry.
Josh is the grips from Scrooge, really looking at the nipples.
Yeah. I would do that. I'm not reading Scarlet Witch.
I don't know. I didn't dislike it, but I was like you excited. I was like, ooh, Kyle Starks. I've loved his last few books. I did like the other book, the one that wasn't like this, you know, the horror one. And they just announced today that they're doing another volume of that.
Good. I thought that was a given.
I've loved all those books. This one I thought was fine. I like everything this week. It was fine.
Yeah.
It was not great.
I had fun with it. I'll read the next one. I'm giving that away. That's a segment.
Ratings. Where Monsters Lie Number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, Kyle Starks, Peter Kowalski, Vladimir Popov, Joshua Reed. Out of 5, I'm giving it a 3.
3.25 stars.
2.75.
And Josh is sticking with it. I will read another issue, Ryan.
Probably not.
All right, there you go. Patreon.com/FMboy. Thanks for voting if you are a patron. And if you're not a patron, consider becoming one today. you can directly support the show. It's our main way of people supporting the show. We appreciate that. Becoming a patron unlocks content for everybody and unlocks tons of shows. We do a bunch of shows beyond this one. They're all unlocked by the patrons. They've created a great community on Discord and I assume on Facebook. And we, as we've been talking about, we revamped our stretch goals for however long the stretch goals continue to live on Patreon. You can check them out there. There's some silly ones, some wacky ones, some fun ones. And we're still working on the second phase of our revamped Patreon because things have happened and gotten in the way. And we're still trying to figure one thing out that we haven't figured out. So it just takes a lot of work that we don't have tons of time for. But we're getting there. We're getting there close. We're getting closer every day. Patreon.com/fanboy. Thanks for being a patron. fanboy.threadless.com is where you can buy our t-shirts. We've got 12 designs. fanboy.com/support is our digital tip jar via PayPal. fanboy.com/amazon is where you can shop. You can find links from the Booksplode books on that page, but you can also just shop at a regular link, and that helps us as well. And finally, bookshop.org is our partner for our Booksplode books, and you can find links for those. Those sales help directly support local bookstores, and we thank you for doing that. We thank them for being local bookstores. And now, without further ado, if you're a $5 or higher patron, you get a superpower live on the show. And this week, it's Ryan's turn.
Well, it's my turn to reveal what Chris Culhane's power is. And Chris Culhane can mentally set a destination. And like in their vehicle, sitting behind the wheel, can set a destination. You know, it can be sitting in Havad Yad. Is that a place,
oh,
Josh?
Wow. He's doing voices.
Havad Yad is the place.
And say, I want to go to Sacramento, and they can set that destination mentally, fall asleep. Their body will drive them there as safely as if they were awake.
Whoa.
And then they'll wake up in Sacramento.
They sleep. They're sleep drivers. Sleep navigating drivers.
Sleep driving power, but it's safe.
Right.
And they're rested. It's restful sleep. It's like they are as rested as if they slept that entire time.
No.
I mean, that's how sleep works.
Not always. Sometimes you don't restful sleep.
Not while driving. Usually.
True. It's true.
Not while your body's doing a different activity.
How comfortable
they just
are
have
other people
a
in the
robot car?
They are
Sorry,
the robot
you both,
car.
You both ask questions.
They are the
I
robot
can't.
Car. How comfortable are other people in the car while this is happening?
Wait, yeah, so he's
I think it would
Uber
depend
driver?
On their comfort level with Chris, right? Like, so if Chris was an Uber driver, Chris could clean up. But I think, you know, in terms of friends and family, like, you would have to, you have to reveal your secret identity. You have to be like, look, I have this power. I can get us to Orlando for this Disney World vacation we've all been waiting on, but I'm going to be asleep the whole time. And you just be cool with that. And if they're cool with that, if they trust him.
Let's get out of the suspension of disbelief. Can you imagine a situation, no matter how perfect his record was, where you are sitting in the passenger seat and you're okay?
No.
No matter how many times you do it, you are not going to get any restful sleep. Oh my God! Look at the oh.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the top of my possible.
I think about the amount of time I drive for work, where I know where I need to get. By a certain, you know, by the end of the day, I need to be here, and I'm alone in my vehicle with all my stuff, and all I need to do is get there. But like, it would be great if I could get there a little more rested than I currently.
You know, I was thinking about your comment earlier where you said he'd be a great Uber driver, but he wouldn't because he'd have to wake up every 5 minutes.
Well, what if you're one
he
of those
getting
people?
Restful sleep? Just as he got to REM, he'd have to start over.
Right, that's true. But from the customer standpoint, if you're one of those people,
oh my
who
god,
doesn't...
the best Uber driver.
Right, exactly.
Well, like, you don't have to worry. I heard all about drug trafficking.
Really?
Yeah.
Not from Chris.
I asked the guy the furthest he'd taken somebody. He said Mexico, and that story ended with drug trafficking. And I was like, cool, we're here. Thanks.
I mean,
not your problem with Chris.
So you started? Did you start chatting with him?
No, he started chatting, and that was my way to get him talking.
Right. That's good. That works.
Yeah, just wanted to go home. I was tired. All right, let's move on. We have two choices here, gentlemen. I thought we'd have way more time considering the books this week, but we blabbered on like idiots.
I did that on purpose.
We can either talk about the DC announcement this week in the one email or do the other two emails.
DC.
Josh, what do you want to do?
I'll read the ADC announcement while you talk about it, and then I'll join in.
That's the first
email. I mean, I know the gist, but I didn't read it.
You going to read the email? Read the email.
Yeah. I don't have to read the email. Like, there's a lot of articles.
No, read the email from the person asking about it.
Oh, read it aloud for the listener.
For the listener who doesn't have the script in front of them.
I'm the one who has to do the research, though. One of you should read it.
Zach from Virginia. You read it, right?
This is a bad show.
Help take. How do you feel about James Gunn bringing Damian to the new DC cinematic universe?
This is one of several emails we've got about asking what we thought about.
Only several?
Well, yeah, we got several. And this was the first one, so I picked it. But several people asked. Most of them were of the angle of about Damian and asking me about that. So
you're saying you've cultivated
the people
a
know.
Kind, yeah, people.
The people know.
Okay. All right.
Everyone, the people know.
All right.
So you know, if you're lived under a rock, James Gunn announced this week the first stage of the new DC. They're calling it the DCU.
And Peter Safran
seems to be the branding problem, but whatever. We'll take it. The first 5 to 10 years, which is hilarious and sad and depressing, and I don't even want to think about it. But they announced the first, you know, the first 10 years. Whatever. The first segment is called Gods and Monsters, and it's going to consist of films and TV shows and animation. And they announced the first 5 films and the first 5.
It's going to consist
TV
of
shows.
X percent amount of things that were already in development, and then some new shit.
Yeah, and you know the thing is about these announcements is some of these things may not happen. You know, they announced an Inhumans movie at one point at Marvel and didn't happen. And sometimes there's things.
We all remember how much we loved that Inhumans movie. Oh man, remember?
And they announced there's things that he has already said the next day that they haven't announced. That's some secret thing. So this is just sort of a taster for what things may or may not happen in the next 10 years or so. So real quickly, the announcements were in order of Creature Commandos, which is a TV animated series, which is apparently already in production. A Waller about Amanda Waller, a TV series called Waller about Amanda Waller, set in a sort of with you know the Suicide
Peacemaker
Squad
universe.
Characters.
Yep,
all of these things are now in the same universe. So except for the Elseworlds ones, which we'll get to. Superman Legacy being the first big kickoff film in July of 2025 that James Gunn is writing, and it's sort of a he said it's not a new origin or anything, but it's sort of a way of rebooting the DC universe.
But it's not Henry Cavill.
Right. Lanterns is a TV series about Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart solving a mystery on Earth.
He said it's a big HBO quality drama, and I was like, I just doubt that.
The Authority film.
No, Josh, there's going to be a whole scene where the two Green Lanterns just say fuck over and over again.
That's The Wire.
That's The Wire.
The Authority. Yeah,
that was the joke I was making.
Film. True Detective.
Well, he compared it to True Detective.
Yeah.
It's a white cop and a black cop who just say, all right, fine.
You could have made a joke about the Green Lantern being a
you know
flat
why?
Circle.
Because I felt offended
that
you would, like, I was like, this isn't going to be that. That's American cinematic, American television history, and this will be. You can read through them, and then
the Authority film, which is you know the Wildstorm characters were popular, relevant 15 years ago.
15,
more than that.
Yeah.
Paradise Lost, a TV series about Themyscira, and in the vein of Game of Thrones, he said, and then the controversial Brave and the Bold film, which is about Batman and Robin.
Controversial might be a little Kilpatrick commentary.
It in which James Gunn uttered the line, "Damian Wayne is my favorite Robin," and immediately I went, "Well, this is doomed. This whole affair is doomed."
A murderer and assassin.
Yeah, this is supposed to be, he said, sort of based on Grant Morrison's Batman and Robin book, but that featured Dick Grayson, so who knows how much it will actually be based
on
that.
We should be so lucky.
Booster Gold TV series, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow film based on the Tom King miniseries, which is interesting because that's so episodic. I thought it would have been more suited to TV. And then a Swamp Thing film that is sort of horror based, and they're already talking to a director on that one. So those are the things he announced. Like I said, some of the things won't be announced. Some things will be announced later. He mentioned in a press conference about animation. And taking a look at that, you know, as some people know, Ryan and I and Paul Montgomery do the animated Brain Trust shows. Who knows if that will be affected by a line of movies that have been coming out for the last, 20 years.
And just to just to make sure we put a ribbon on everything, there will be a The Batman Part 2 from Matt Reeves, but that will be Robert Pattinson's final Bruce Wayne. And then there will be The Joker Folie à Deux, Todd Phillips' Joker sequel. But those, that sounds like that'll be it. And then there's maybe going to be like a Ta-Nehisi Coates, J.J. Abrams Superman.
Well, that's, again, you can't, I mean, this is not it. Like, this is, things will happen and not happen. There'll be more things. If the Joker sequel makes another $1 billion, there'll be a third one. They'll be doing Elseworlds movies, as Ryan just said, which I found really interesting that he mentioned that, because Elseworlds is a term that the comics people got rid of. And now that the movies are bringing them back, I'm curious if the comics will follow suit, as often happens. So
I thought comics was wrong for getting rid of it in the first place.
Yes.
He singularly has more power than anybody in publishing.
Possibly. These things run much more complicated than we think from the outside. Also, just to mention, the first four films coming out from DC will be the legacy films, Shazam, The Flash, Blue Beetle, and Aquaman, which are... His whole thing was, these are all in the same universe, and he said these films could exist in the new universe, so we'll see how that works. He says The Flash sort of resets everything at the end. I've heard they're redoing the ending of that movie, or at least maybe changing the final scene.
And Blue Beetle, starring Cobra Kai's own, Sholo Maradueña.
So
I'm very excited about.
His whole thing seemed to be he wants to create a cohesive universe. He wants the same actors playing characters across movies, TVs, and animation. He wants it all to feel as a piece. We'll see if that's possible. I mean, I guess it is. Marvel's doing it. You know, we'll see. I thought the most interesting things to me were two. One, the Elseworlds thing, and two, he basically said, look, the previous regimes fucked all this up. And I was surprised and shocked he said that in the video. But
somebody had to.
Yes, but they usually don't say that on corporate videos. They usually leak that to the press.
But man, it's refreshing.
Anything stand out to you, Ryan?
I mean, literally, like I said, I was excited, surprising myself, that the Blue Beetle film is still on with Solo. Like, I love him on Cobra Kai. I thought he's perfect casting for Jaime Reyes. I'm excited to see what, and he's young, and it's like it's vibrant. I'm excited to see where that goes in a legitimate way. Everything else.
They're just log lines. There's nothing even to talk about, really, other than the idea of this is what they're doing.
I mean, everything else is like, it seems better than the direction DC was going, but like, I didn't like the direction DC was going. So
I mean, it's the direction Marvel is going has gone.
Listen, I don't tell your listeners this, Josh, but I'm decreasingly excited about Marvel projects.
Well, I mean, I guess that's the thing, is because of that reason, it's like, we're going to do what Marvel did. And it's like, they already did it. That doesn't sound
super... did it to the point where I'm kind of bored with the Marvel stuff.
Yeah, it's not delivered. We've talked about that. But I don't know. I read through all those announcements and I was like, I feel like this is more of a message to shareholders than it is a lot of things that are actually going to happen. And you know, based on track records, like I don't, you know, I believe it when I see it, I guess.
Well, that's the smart thing to say about anything that gets announced before it's made, but
or even like conceived of.
The one I would like to know more information on before casting judgment is what version of the Authority is James Gunn looking at in terms of the adaptation? Because if he's looking to, like, depending on the era of Authority, because Authority's had like 3-4-ish eras, depending on how you break down the Wildstorm to DC to quasi reboot, you know, of it all. Some of those make me excited to see it on the big screen, others less so.
It's going to be just like Suicide Squad. That's what I think.
It's interesting because, look, anything can be good. Anything can be good if the script is good, you know, the writing, the directing is good, and the actors are good. But the Authority, to me, is a very specific situation. It's a very specific counterpoint to superhero comics. And to start with the Authority seems to miss the point of the Authority. You know what I mean? Like, if you do the Authority later on, after you've sort of had your fill of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, of these guys don't get the job done, now we're here, that's what the story was, as opposed to starting off with them. But whatever, there's been superhero movies for 20 years. Who cares?
Batman and Superman didn't get the job done in a cinematic sense. So they've got that going for them.
Yeah. It's what I'm least interested in by a wide margin. That's not true.
I was going to say, really?
So I would put the Authority, Waller, and Creature Commandos in the same bucket as
those. I'd say Creature Commandos.
The Paradise Lost is close to the. I mean, after. The first Wonder Woman movie was great. The second Wonder Woman movie, I could barely get through.
Yeah,
so terrible. I'm not interested in that. And without Gal Gadot, I can't imagine a world where I'm interested in a Wonder Woman property. Like, if you're developing Wonder Woman property specifically so you don't have to figure out whether or not you can get Gal Gadot on board, I'm just like, well, what are you doing?
Well, they have to be able to move on from those actors. That's why they're all being recast. Marvel's different because those two movies all work. People liked them. The other movies didn't work, and a lot of people didn't like them. So they have to start over. They have to. They have to move on from Henry Cavill. They got to move on from Ben Affleck. They got to move on.
Well, it's not like those were hugely successful, so right. It's not like it's a big risk for them.
That's
to
my
do
point.
It.
That they can move on because they, you know, we talk about the opposite with Marvel. That the problem is that they're not moving on.
Listen, right? Dwayne The Rock Johnson told me that the hierarchy of power in the DC universe was about to change. And I went and saw the movie, and I don't know that it did.
It is, it is interesting because right now at the box office, the only thing that really works are big spectacle films. It's like Tom Cruise and then superheroes. And so,
I think you just made the right pitch, by the way.
And so
Tom Cruise is Midnighter.
And so all these I think there's a good chance all these things
Tom Cruise is Hal Jordan.
Somewhere.
Make it.
Tom Cruise is, well, it's a TV show. He's not going to do that, but.
Well, that's not what I mean. Just change it. Tom Cruise says he wants to do it, and he does all his own space stunts. That's a real ring he's wearing.
Right. Tom Cruise is actually...
Tom Cruise actually developed a Green Lantern ring.
He went to OWA. Tom Cruise really went to OWA and learned to defeat the dragons.
Can use his willpower to create hard-like
constructs. Scientology was a joke. But what he did was they cleared out all the Thetans. We're about to get canceled.
Xenu was actually a guardian.
Yeah. And like, he did it. He harnessed the willpower. He made it to level 87, and at that point you get a ring. He's the first one to do it.
You know, as we get closer, I'll be more excited. Less, I mean, obviously, I'm not excited at all about Damien. I'm bummed that he's now going to be enshrined as the DC movie Robin. That's terrible, in my opinion. But whatever. No one, you know, my opinion is just one opinion of many.
You think James Gunn will give us Supergirl, or is that forever destroyed?
What do you mean?
Not Supergirl, Batgirl. Sorry, I misspoke.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. You would never skip a well-known character like that.
But no, I meant the movie they already made, and they just didn't give us.
No, that movie's gone.
Wow.
It's gone.
So weird.
They took the tax break, and it's gone. They legally can't release it. And from everything I've heard from people who aren't super comic fans, it was not good, so I'm not sad about it. It was an elevated TV movie, which would have been a disaster at the box office, considering... Everything else they've released has been somewhat an elevated TV movie, so it would have been bad for the brand to release it in the first place. So, you know, we'll see. I'm not, you know, I'm not a James Gunn guy. I don't like the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
Yeah,
I didn't like the Suicide Squad movie. I didn't even watch the TV show one.
Peacemaker was good. I liked Peacemaker.
But
I liked the Suicide Squad movie, but I went to watch Peacemaker, and I was like, I've had enough of this.
That's I think I liked it. The Peacemaker show better than the Suicide Squad movie. I think the James Gunn milieu actually worked in that context a little bit better for me, long form, than it did feature film length, personally.
Fair.
But also the opening sequence with the wigwam, it was just, I couldn't get enough of. So.
But the thing is, if he's a good executive, these movies will not have his imprint on them. They will have the imprint of whoever is hired to write and direct them.
It sounds like he's going to have his thumb on the scale early on, and I guess it'll remain to be seen to what degree he is willing to lift his thumb off the scale as these movies succeed or fail with or without him to varying.
Well, yeah, he apparently wrote every episode of Creature Commandos. Waller is from his world, and he's writing Superman Legacy. So the first three in the list are all his.
The Waller one is the one that flummoxes me, because like, what about that character suggests that they can carry a whole show?
And we'll see. I mean, all these things depend on the execution. But yeah, I mean, I'm not excited about it. We have some time. We've got 2 years till this really hits. So.
When you said we have some time, I thought you meant on the show. I was like, John, no. I thought we were about done with the show.
Can we, just before we wrap this up, is there anything you guys think of that you like?
I'm really
anything.
I'm really intrigued
in like the DC extended cinematic universe.
No. Let's just talk about some things we like for 4 or 5 minutes before we shut this down.
You know what I like, Josh? I like skiing.
Okay, we gotta stay on topic. So I am curious about Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. I mean, Josh, you love that book. I like that book a lot.
I like the book a lot too.
It was True Grit in space. So that's interesting to me. I'm interested in Lanterns. You know, I love a cop show. I love the Green Lanterns. I love Hal Jordan and John Stewart. So that's interesting to me. I'm desperate for someone to really understand Superman. And if he can pull that off, because it's so diametrically opposed to his sensibility normally, that'll be great. He's buddies with Grant Morrison. He keeps tweeting images of All-Star Superman. I don't think he's going to do that story. It wouldn't make sense for a kickoff movie. But if he can take that sensibility and imbue it into a film, I think he might, all of his other stuff might be worth it. So, you know, there's things here I'm looking forward to. Booster Gold's an interesting choice.
I think that could be a really fun property.
Yeah,
that was one that I was like, oh, that could be cool. But it was, you know, on all the lists of everything, it was far enough down the list where, Connor, when you talk about the fact that, you know, these things may not happen, that was the one where I'm like, well, I don't really believe that there's going to be a Booster Gold show. Like, I believe someone said there's going to be a Booster Gold show, but I don't believe there's going to be a Booster Gold show.
Ironically, Booster Gold has no name recognition, which is the character's problem.
Yeah,
you know, like
both textually and metatextually.
Yes, exactly, and I like that.
What's so interesting?
Who do you cast, Josh?
Josh is bad at casting.
I am, but it's like a Ryan Reynolds type character.
What's interesting is Marvel did the meat and potatoes. You know, it was like Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Captain America, and here you've got some really off the wall choices. So,
well. If anything else, it is important to know that James Gunn was the first person to make a successful movie out of characters that nobody fucking knew.
Yes.
Do you remember when we heard, oh yeah, and we heard it early because you know, we're people who know people, the next movie is going to be Guardians, and we were like, bullshit. Like, didn't believe it at all.
Yeah.
And it was. Yeah, and it was, you know, successful. Connor, they're not your favorites, but I think it was successful.
No, they're super successful. Measure. I just don't like them personally, but they're really successful movies. Hugely successful.
I like the first one an awful lot. I like
them both an awful lot.
I like the second one, but I don't love it. I love the first movie.
So
I'm entirely sick of Chris Pratt in all forms now.
We don't have time to get into that.
Chris Pratt is Booster Gold.
No,
right. I mean, that would be what he would do, because he just like, oh, maybe I'll be the lead in this animated movie. You've been the lead in too many animated movies. My kids know your voice. They don't know anyone's voice.
Yeah, you're not Mario.
That's a me. It's a Mario.
Wow. And literally, my
Connor
son
just
goes,
did a better audition for Mario than anything I've heard from
my son. The first thing my son says, my 8-year-old who's never played a Mario game in his life, that doesn't sound like Mario. And I was like, welcome, my son.
Which is a bummer because it looks awesome. Like, the animation
does look
terrific.
Good. It does.
If they hadn't already done Patrick Wilson as Aquaman's brother,
Orm,
he could Ocean be a good Master.
He's too old.
Yeah, we can't keep casting 50-year-olds in these parts. That's what Marvel ran into.
You know who it should be? Some kid who's under 30 that we don't know.
Yeah.
That's what they did with
somebody from Euphoria.
Blue Beetle, and I'm happy about it.
Right. Yeah. That's the age the character should be.
And I looked him up recently. He's got like a full, you know, Shola's got a full beard now. I'm like, well, shit. They should have done this when he was doing YouTube Cobra Kai season one.
All right. So there's, you know, it was exciting. Some of the things I didn't like, it's exciting. I would love someone to get DC films on track.
Real quick. Like, yeah. Did you feel like an actual feeling of excitement?
Yeah, because DC has been a mess in terms of films, even forever, even counting the Nolan films, because they took the wrong, they learned a wrong lesson from the Nolan films. So the people in charge haven't done it well. And so I've been desperate for somebody to be in charge who knows what they're doing, or at least what they want, and has a vision and executes on it. Because traditionally, Warner Brothers has been running as a fiefdom of warring parties, and that's always resulted in bad product.
And that's the question, really, is if they're allowed to maintain a vision, if they're allowed to follow through with it. I think 2 movies into this that aren't blockbusters, they yank the cord.
And it's entirely possible, yeah.
Yeah.
But Josh, I want to ask you the same question. Did you feel like reading the announcements, reading the list of
you're asking this to Josh? Slate,
I yeah. literally just told you I didn't read it.
But do you feel
I
any
read
excitement?
Them just now.
Do you feel
no.
any
Josh
excitement?
Is not the person no. who would though.
No,
I know,
yeah,
but
no.
I can still ask, he's the person on this show. I can't ask any. I've asked the both of you. These are the two people I can talk to.
I know, but Connor's saying you should already know the answer.
I know, and but it's
everybody
we're
listening
a discussion.
Should know the answer. I understand.
All right, fine. Let's yeah. Well,
no, I mean, but that's just like I'm not a good. I'm not a good
he's
example
not the audience.
Of it. No, I'm not. Like you say to me, like it's going to be a Supergirl movie, and what I think is, it's already a great comic book. Whatever. Like I don't.
He's not the audience.
Like, and yeah, no, and like if something is great, but specifically DC movies, like I have no confidence in them. None. Like the best you hear about any of them is, it was all right. It was pretty good, which is not exciting. I want to be wowed. I want to be blown away by something. I want to have the feeling like I had when I saw Avengers or like when I watched The Mandalorian the first time. That's the only thing that's going to make me super happy. Like a bunch of stuff that's okay isn't my genre. Like I like it in comic books, but I don't need to watch okay superhero movies so I can see the leader on TV. I don't care.
What about MODOK?
There was a MODOK show. I didn't watch it.
No, there's in the movie. You want to see a MODOK movie? Should we get MODOK up there?
No.
You want what about a Taron Egerton Booster Gold?
No. He's too squat.
What about Chris Pratt MODOK?
Taron Egerton could do like a Hal Jordan.
I kind of want Taron Egerton as MCU Eddie Brock.
What?
Eddie Brock has to be giant.
I know, but Taron Egerton compared to Tom Holland is going to be a giant.
Yeah,
Taron Egerton can actually play giant. It's crazy.
I know.
He's 5 foot
Taron
four.
Taron Egerton is the next generation's Bruce Willis. I'm just saying it. I'm putting it out in the world. It's true.
I don't even know what to do with that sentence.
This is so different. That's not. He's not funny.
I'm trying to think. I was like, Eddie the Eagle was kind of funny.
Yeah, but he wasn't because he wasn't pulling off a. It was because the writing was funny and the situational yeah. comedy was funny. It wasn't because he was like hilarious.
You know who wasn't funny? Wolverine, Hugh Jackman, not funny.
I mean, I'm also like you. I also say Bruce Willis is unreplaceable, but like if you know, in terms of the best we got, Taron Egerton might be it.
Wait.
See you next week.
I literally don't. I don't understand. Can I get your definition of what you think Bruce Willis is?
I've been watching Blackbird on your recommendation.
Okay, but how's that?
What does that have to do with Bruce Willis?
Ray Liotta.
He does a lot of squinting and growling, and his Taron Egerton pretending to be Ray Liotta reminds me of young Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis's whole thing was smirky.
Yeah,
like
I think Taron's got it.
He was in on the joke, and very very funny. In
Blackbird, there was no joke.
It was dire.
That character was never happy. He was never anything. He got a little freaked out once.
I'm just saying.
Bruce Willis couldn't play that role.
You don't
what
have
is
to
happening
agree with me.
Here?
I don't know. Because Bruce Willis is your typical sort of New York City, New Jersey bartender.
He was a New Jersey bartender. That's what he was.
I'm not even – see how good I am?
Yeah.
I'm not even supposed to be here today, but I guess I'll save the day.
He's the everyman by default. He's like he's
right.
That's why we can't do 20 minutes on Die Hard. We can't.
Just like Cheshire England born Taron Egerton.
I don't understand.
Thanks for writing in, Zach.
This pizza is exactly like Coco Van.
And other people who wrote in about the movie announcement. Thanks for writing in.
I need the hell out of a Coco Van pizza.
Contact@ifanboy.com is how you can also write in. We had a bunch of emails we were going to do, but we didn't do them, so we'll try to do them next week.
We're busy yelling at each other.
We have a lot of extra shows this week. In fact, we've got too many for the number of weeks we have. But previous to this show, last week we had our Media Explode show, in which we talked about the mini movies and TV shows we watched during the holiday break. Prior to that, we had our Book Explode on Black Sad, All Fall Down Part 1. That was fun. This month, we're going to have a Legion of Superheroes animated brain trust episode. That's probably next week.
So after tonight, Connor, I don't have time.
We're going to figure this out. The week after that, we have Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which comes out. We'll have a show about that. And then sometime, we're going to have a Media Explode show. And I think we're going to have a Talk Explode, Josh.
I'll work on that.
We have three more weeks. We got four more shows. So we'll figure it out. One of them might slip into March. We'll see. But we'll get them all to you as we always do. Just sometimes not always on schedule. Ryan, you did Science Sort of tonight.
Yeah, I recorded an episode that won't be out for a few weeks after hearing this episode, but my long-awaited interview with Jake Hinge Lopez Alt about his new book, The Walk, should be out by the time this episode drops. So go check that out at scienceworld.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Learn about cooking with gas or induction. It's not a political statement. Walks work with everything.
It turns out that burning fossil fuels in your house may not be ideal.
Unless you want to get that wok hay, the breath of the wok.
Listen, I have an electric stove and I'm willing to risk cancer for everybody for it because it's terrible. You can't stir fry anything. I got to get a new grill.
You need an induction stove.
Or you need an outdoor butane burner.
Just start cooking with fire in your kitchen.
I sure don't think it'd go wrong there. Nothing. I live in the woods, you know.
Yeah. No, in the kitchen. Just start a fire. Cook that way.
Hmm. You know what?
I hear we didn't start the fire.
Someone
who's always burning.
Josh, please, for love of God, get to the outro.
The world's been turning.
This is
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray.
What the fuck happened this week? This is what happens when our minds aren't focused on good comics. That everything just falls completely apart.
We're getting to a meeting in 10 minutes.
It's a weird time.
It's nighttime. It's the right time.
All right, kids. So you just did that part, and I'm going to say to you, you can find our library of over 1,200 much better shows.
Whoa.
Yeah, I would say so.
Slow down. No.
1,200 shows. Not all. You know, this had its charms. I really like that Bruce Willis bit an awful lot. That's over at ifanboy.com. You can find the shows anywhere on podcasts. They're all in a big old XML feed. I've been doing this forever, and I said XML feed, and I was like, I don't
know. Said anywhere on podcasts.
I said XML feed, and as I was saying it, I thought, I don't really know what that is.
That's still a thing?
It's an RSS feed.
XML feeds aren't a thing anymore?
I mean, they might be, but I know RSS feeds were the podcast.
No, that sounds, what Ryan's saying is correct. And the thing was, back in the old days, we would really like edit the actual RSS
feed. We
were in there.
You were hacking into the mainframe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just now, you know, however many years later, I was like, I don't know. I felt like the oldest man on earth.
There wasn't this drag and drop podcasting. People had to work for it.
True. We got lazy, but we deserve it.
I thought you were going to say we got laid.
I didn't. Follow us at ifanboycomics.com. Jesus Christ. Instagram is ifanboycomics.
This one's not going in the archives.
You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. This is instructional. This is not how we do things.
This is a warning.
Normally the show ends, I send it off to the Library of Congress, and I'm not doing that with this one.
I'll deliver it in person.
On Instagram, J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. I'm going to eat a cookie while I say this next part. At Ryan Helped on Instagram. Ryan is also Helped on Twitter. Are you still on Twitter?
It's deleted off my phone, but the account still exists.
Make it happen, buddy.
I'm working on it.
Subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where you can find all of our old video shows. We did several years of old video shows. You can find them there, as well as this show. We post it every week to YouTube. So if you're someone who listens or watches a lot of YouTube, you can always watch our show there. There's nothing to see, but you can listen to it. I mean, there's a cover, but it doesn't move. Nothing happens. Anyway.
I want to listen to some YouTube.
Here's what I'm going to say. Don't review this episode. Review as an aggregate. Take 18 years, average it out. And please leave a star rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify,
Disagree.
Wherever you listen to your
podcast. Disagree.
Don't do this one.
Listen to this and then take a random sampling of three other episodes. And you'll be like, oh, those other ones were really good. I don't know what that accent was I just
what
did there.
What happened to them this week? They just can't focus? Didn't like anything? Did they talk about Bruce Willis for 25 minutes, but no one was sure why?
I was relatively positive about the comics.
You were really trying, though. You were working for it.
Thanks for listening.
You were reaching, you son of a bitch.
Until next week, I'm Connor.
Now remember, when Connor says review the last 18 years of the episode, that's half my age, and I'm Ryan.
I don't think this was that bad. It was pretty good.
We'll let the people
I don't
decide.
Think so either. I think Connor's being needlessly negative.
There it is again.
Yeah. You met Connor?
All the stars point me to you, and lately they just drive me crazy. A universe can be so cruel, so baby, baby, be my lady. sun. I've been oh so blue, stuck behind the moon. Now let me in, back where we begin. And let me hold you like the way I used to do.
All right, I'm going to stop this nonsense.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.